Answering Mormons Questions by Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson deals with 36 commonly asked questions by your LDS friends and neighbors. It's a great resource for Christians who want to share their faith with friends and loved ones. Be sure to pick up your copy today at your favorite Christian bookstore. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
How did the early Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints handle dissenters in the year 1838? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We've been talking about the Salt Sermon. It is mentioned in this new history titled Saints, the Standard of Truth, published in 2018 by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And as we have said in this series, we are quite pleased that this history is certainly much more transparent than many of the things talked about in Mormon history in the past. However, there's still a lot that, of course, you could say to fill in a lot of the blanks. And one of the criticisms that we do have of this new volume of history is it tends to bounce around back and forth. You really have to pay attention or you can be lost. It's kind of difficult sometimes to get a good timeline on how all these events are coming down. But as we've been talking about this week, we've been discussing a controversial sermon given by Joseph Smith's right-hand man, Sidney Rigdon, a sermon that came to be known as the Salt Sermon, where Sidney Rigdon had finally had enough of all the criticisms against himself, against Joseph Smith, and other leaders in the church, where now he's going to bring down the hammer in condemnation against all those who are dissenting against the leadership. And in doing so, we told you that we were going to go to another book titled Sidney Rigdon, A Portrait of Religious Excess, written by Richard Van Wagner. On page 218, he goes into some of the details regarding the Salt Sermon and the aftermath of the delivery of that sermon.
He writes on page 218, immediately following the Salt Sermon, as it was subsequently known, John Coryell sought out Mormon dissenter John Whitmer and advised him that in the wake of Rigdon's address, Whitmer's safety might be in question. Whitmer did not believe that the saints as a body would turn on him, but he went to the prophet for advice. He was told that he and W.W. Phelps would have to surrender their property in Far West, and as you mentioned yesterday, Bill, that's a Mormon settlement in Missouri, real estate that they were accused of purchasing with church funds. He advised Whitmer to, quote, place the property in the hands of the bishop and high council to be disposed of according to the laws of the church, and things will quiet down, end quote.
So it seems that John Whitmer, the father of David Whitmer, whose name is in every edition of the Book of Mormon because he was one of the three witnesses, didn't really believe that his life could be in any danger. Apparently, even after Rigdon gives this address, he's questioning whether or not that is to be taken seriously. But as we're going to find in this book, they better take it seriously if they are in the crosshairs of Sidney Rigdon and even Joseph Smith, because as we mentioned yesterday, Joseph Smith, after Rigdon gives his Salt Sermon, he gets up, and as Van Wagner notes, the prophet delivered a short speech sanctioning Rigdon's address. So Joseph Smith is condoning what Sidney Rigdon said in this Salt Sermon, although it says that Smith had a qualification. He didn't want the brethren to act unlawfully. But as we discussed yesterday, when this sentence goes on, Smith says, but I will tell them one thing, Judas was a traitor, and instead of hanging himself, was hung by Peter. And of course, that raises the question, what did Joseph Smith mean by that? Because it sounds like in one breath he's saying, don't act unlawfully, but in the second breath, he's saying, take the law into your own hands.
Well, could it be a higher law that he's referring to? Because if the law of God supersedes the law of man, then perhaps there might be opportunities to be able to do things that the law on this earth would say is wrong, but God's law would say is okay.
And I would probably argue, Eric, that there's probably several precedents that would support exactly what you just said. The Mormons always look to this higher law as overriding man's law. Let's look at the subject of polygamy, for instance. There's a good example right there. We find that John Whitmer has been told by John Caryll that he better get out of here, and Whitmer doesn't believe it. But he's told also that he and W.W. Phelps need to surrender their property in Far West. And of course, the excuse being that they were accused of purchasing this land with church funds. But what does it go on to say at the bottom of page 218?
Whitmer refused. In consequence, he, Oliver Cowdery, David Whitmer, W.W. Phelps, and Lyman E. Johnson received a lengthy ultimatum drafted by Rigdon demanding that they leave Far West in 3 days.
So they have 3 days to pack their bags, pack their family, all of their belongings, and get out of the area. In other words, they have just threatened some of their own members with the same kind of punishment that a lot of the locals in Missouri wanted to instill upon the Latter-day Saints because they didn't like them being there. So here we have the Mormons doing the very same thing with some of its own members, though I admit they are dissenters, they are critics of Joseph Smith and the leadership. But you can see the kind of tension that has taken place in 1838 in Missouri. But then on page 219, what does Van Wagner say, Eric?
He said, 84 of Far West's most influential Mormons, including Hiram Smith of the First Presidency, signed the document, which reads in part.
And before you read that, let's mention Hiram Smith of the First Presidency. That is Joseph Smith's brother, Hiram Smith. That's who it's talking about. Now, what does it say in this document that is going to threaten these particular dissenters?
Out of the county you shall go, and no power shall save you, and you shall have 3 days after you receive this communication to you, including 24 hours in each day, for you to depart with your families peaceably, which you may do undisturbed by any person. But in that time, if you do not depart, we will use the means in our power to cause you to depart.
So it sounds like a forced evacuation there. You've got 3 days to get out of Dodge. And if you don't do it, something's going to happen to you. Now, if you were on the receiving end of this threat, Eric, how would you feel?
I would think I would be taking this pretty seriously.
This affidavit, this document goes on to say what?
We have solemnly warned you, and that in the most determined manner, that if you did not cease that course of wanton abuse of the citizens of this county, that vengeance would overtake you sooner or later, and that when it did come, it would be as furious as the mountain torrent and as terrible as the beating tempest. But you have affected to despise our warnings and pass them off with a sneer or a grin or a threat, and pursued your former course, and vengeance sleepeth not, neither does it slumber. And unless you heed us this time and attend to our request, it will overtake you at an hour when you do not expect it, and at a day when you do not look for it. And for you there shall be no escape, for there is but one decree for you, which is depart, depart, or a more fatal calamity shall befall you.
A more fatal calamity shall befall you. Now, again, I ask that question. If you're on the receiving end of this threat, how do you take that? I'm sure they would take this very seriously. It sounds like the church leadership means what it is saying here. Now, thankfully, folks, the LDS Church doesn't quite operate this way any longer. Though, as I've mentioned, many people do feel threatened when they finally decide to leave their membership behind and become an ex-Mormon. They do find themselves being treated in a most uncomfortable manner many times, and they do have their character assassinated oftentimes, sadly by some family members even. It's a sad state of affairs, that's to be sure. But let's get back to what the book says here on page 219. After it has this excerpt from this document, what does Van Wagner say?
On Tuesday, when dissidents were informed that preparations were being made to hang them up that night, they fled town with only the clothes on their backs.
And we should mention the phrase "hang them up" is in quotation marks. Now, again, how would you take it? If you think they're going to hang you up, and they've already said that a more fatal calamity can befall you, how do you understand this message? It sounds like it's a death threat. And if you think you're going to stay there and fight that off or think they're bluffing, that could be very dangerous. They end up realizing they better flee, and they do. They fled town with only the clothes on their backs. At the bottom of this chapter, it says, in years to come, after Rigdon dissented from Brigham Young's brand of Mormonism, blame for these civil rights violations was heaped squarely on his shoulders. Now, again, this is Richard Van Wagner writing this. This is the bottom of page 219 of his book. See, Rigdon is later on going to leave the LDS Church when Brigham Young ends up becoming Joseph Smith's successor. Rigdon, I'm sure, felt that because of his position in the church up until the time of Joseph Smith's death, he was next in line. But that's not what was going to happen. Brigham Young instead becomes the new leader of the church, and you might say Rigdon kind of rides off into the proverbial sunset. He doesn't totally abandon this restored message that he's learned from Joseph Smith, but he no longer becomes a viable force in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
It's almost like you have two competitors right after the death of Joseph Smith trying to figure out who was going to be the leader. And certainly Sidney Rigdon thought that he ought to be the one who ought to be named the president. And Brigham Young was better in the political sense of the word to be able to figure out how to get the people to side with him. And so Sidney Rigdon, I think after that, there's not room for two queen bees. One's going to have to be out of the picture.
Yeah, Van Wagner goes on to say that Jedediah M. Grant, now Grant would later become a member of the First Presidency under Brigham Young, about 10 years after this event takes place. But it says Jedediah M. Grant, for example, wrote in 1844 that Rigdon began to, quote, pour his wrath in torrents upon the heads, end quote, of the dissenters who had, quote, made shipwreck concerning the faith. But John Whitmer focused the situation more accurately when he wrote regarding the persecution of apostates. See, John Whitmer sees it a little bit differently. He obviously did not agree with Brigham Young's later assessment that this was just Sidney Rigdon's fault. And as we mentioned earlier, Joseph Smith was a part of this also. But according to John Whitmer, and this is in quotation marks, J. Smith, which of course is Joseph Smith, S. Rigdon, that would be Sidney Rigdon, and Hiram Smith were the instigators, according to John Whitmer. And it says that Book of Mormon witness David Whitmer confirmed this perspective in an 1881 interview where it quotes him saying, Smith and Rigdon issued a decree organizing what was termed the Danites, or destroying angels, who were bound by the most fearful oaths to obey the commandments of the leaders of the church. In tomorrow's show, we're going to look at this group that came to be known as the Danites.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism.